Well, aren't you a regular Nancy Drew?
I learned that from the Nancy Drew detective.
Okay, go.
You think you can follow the clues and solve the case of the missing condiment, Nancy Drew?
Because I've read every Nancy Drew mystery ever written.
Nancy, please tell me you're joking.
Wow, you suck at this Nancy Drew stuff. You should get a new hobby.
My name is Carson Drew, and this is my assistant, Nancy.
Nancy Drew.
It's curtains for you, Miss Drew.
Nancy Drew strikes again.
A regular Nancy Drew.
Hello, regular Drews.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to episode 83.
We have a very fun, different topic today, something we have never covered before.
Oh my god, so exciting. A little drum roll. There's a funny joke in Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
Where they do that, like, give me a drum roll. And it's like, did you just make a helicopter noise? No, it's a drum roll. The Nancy Drew 1995 TV show.
Yay.
Yes, I'm so, so super excited about this. One, because it had been such a long time since I had seen this that it basically was new to me, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And also because I feel like is it good? Like, it seems.
That's the question of the day.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's good.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm waffling on the edge of a knife point because there are definitely some really weird bits. Like, it's a 90s TV show.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And you can tell.
Oh, God, yeah. But I feel like structurally, it's good and it's they're so short that it's a little bit like, what did I just watch?
It's confusing in that way. My brain doesn't really know what to make of it. Because you get to the end of it, and it's like, well, nothing has happened. But then, like, a second later, she solves it, and it's like, well, she did that really well. But what did we solve? Hold on.
Yes. That's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. But I have, like, a good time.
Yeah, they're really fun. Mean? You enjoy it, and it's like, what?
Wait. It's like, wait, what just happened? And then it's like you're into the next one already. You're like, well, okay, well, like, I guess we just keep going. Yeah. And they're so short. It's like 20 minutes. There's no time commitment. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I wanted to just watch more. And funny story, I talked about this a little bit in the Scoop Sesh that we just recorded, but I accidentally watched the wrong episodes.
So I have a bone to pick with this. Yeah, so we are going to be covering the first two episodes today. Welcome to the Callisto and Happy Birthday, Nancy. It's hard to find which episodes in the right order, because if you just Google this show, the episode titles are going to show up in Spanish for some reason. And I first watched this show a year ago when we were preparing for our adaptations history episode, and I watched them all on Tubi. And back then they were in English on Tubi, all in the correct order. Now, when I went on there this time, because you told me that you were having trouble finding them in the right order on YouTube. So I went on to Tubi. They're all in Spanish and they're in the wrong order. So I don't like
what happened, Tubi.
You guys, they're free on Tubi if you speak Spanish, and they're free on YouTube, but they're all in the wrong order. Mm-hmm. So maybe just like get the DVD.
But they're not listed that way. Like on YouTube, there's like a retro something playlist that I watched them on, retro rerun playlist that I watched them on. Thank you to whoever runs that YouTube channel. But it says like episode one.
And it's not. It's episode four is what they call episode one.
I was so dumb. I don't know why I didn't realize this, but like as I was like taking notes on the episodes, I wrote down, because I looked up the titles of the episodes, the Welcome to the Callisto and Happy Birthday, Nancy. I looked those up ahead of time so that I knew what they would be. But then when I started watching them, I saw at the bottom of the screen, like in quotes, like something else. I was like, does this episode have two different titles? I was so dumb.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize that until I made it all the way through, and I was like, this is not. And then I looked at the list again, and I was like, Oh, those are later episodes that I watched. Like, I was like, oh my God.
So you guys can find these for free free online if you want to watch them, but it just might be hard to, you know, figure out what you're actually watching. I did see somebody took those retro rerun episodes and then made a playlist where it was like the actual air order. So somebody else did have that playlist. I don't remember what account made that, but maybe look for that one specifically instead if you care about watching them in the right order. They're not really... They're not super consecutive, although I think it is a good idea to watch one and two first just because of how they introduce Best George and Ned. But, you know, otherwise, otherwise it's probably fine to watch out of order.
I definitely agree, because when I watched what I thought was the first episode, I was like, what are we doing here, you guys? Like, we're just in this city. Like, Nancy is, like, doing random stuff. I'm like, is she in school? She's temping? Why is she temping? I'm like, how could she afford her apartment while she's temping? I was like, this is supposed to be a really nice, fancy apartment. What is going on here? I was definitely had those questions. And when I actually watched the actual first episode, it made a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. So definitely recommend that. Yeah, no, in general, I thought that the episodes, because they're so short, they are really, it's hard to understand what's going on. But also because I feel like the way that they try to do it is very, I mean, I guess this is good, like, filmography, like, they're showing and not telling,
right?
You know what I mean? But it took me a lot of rewinding to figure out what people, like, what actually happened. Like, there's one part in the second episode where they're being followed by the bad guy and they, like, do this, like, trick or whatever. And so, like, Nancy goes up to him and does something and then runs away and he chases her.
She takes his picture.
Yes.
Well, because that camera.
It took me so long to figure it out.
That little pocket camera that she had, you wouldn't recognize that as being a camera today.
I was like, did she take something of his? Did she touch it? I watched it so many times and I don't know, the way that it's shot, I couldn't see what it was that she was doing. I couldn't see it.
Well, she does. She kind of holds, like, her arm in the way of the camera too. Yes! So you only see, like, half of it. Yeah.
So there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that. And also the way the audio is not super clear. And I don't know if that's because of its upload on YouTube or if it was just the audio quality of the 90s television show. But that, like, combined with the fact that they're not, it's much more, you have to watch, you have to pay attention. It was really hard to, like, understand some of the things they were saying. And I'm like, what are they talking about here? And there are these 90s-isms and there's, like, some, it's old enough to where it's like, I don't really get it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really get some of the innuendo here.
Sure.
Because this came out in 1995. And while I was alive at that time.
We were 2 years old.
I was not old enough to watch the show or to really understand what was going on around me. So there's stuff, there's, like, context to it that I think is very early 90s that that I don't really get.
Bess is even making, like, late 80s pop culture references in some of it too. So
I'm like, I don't really know what this means. So there's a lot of that. So it's a very fever dream experience for me to watch.
It's a little disorienting because it is so short, it cannot follow a typical structure of a mystery story or even just a mystery procedural. Like, there are no time to introduce multiple suspects.
No.
And it's like, okay, who were the suspects? But then it's like, it's not even a mystery that requires a lot of suspects because it's not like it's necessarily a crime that has been committed. It's just, like, a very strange happening that Nancy needs to figure out why this weird thing happened or what is that person's motivation for acting that way. But it's not like we have a crime and we're solving it. And so it's just these little, like, little bite-sized mysteries that somehow they end up making it, like, a full thing for her. It is a thing that she can solve, but it's like, how did we get
really
here?
It's really impressive.
Yeah, it is. It is, actually. But it doesn't make the mystery that good plot-wise.
But it's like, is it – the thing that I'm so confused about is I'm like, what is the concept here? You know what I mean? And maybe this is, like, a type of television show that existed in the 90s that doesn't exist anymore. But I just don't understand what they were trying to go for. You know what I mean? Because, like you're saying, it's clearly not about the mystery. But then there's like nothing else. It's like 20 minutes, you guys. Like, what can you do in 20 minutes? Like, what are you, what is it about?
But then we still have plenty of time for like scenes where Bess, George, and Nancy just go to the coffee shop, or Nancy and Ned just like go get some lunch. And it's like, well, that was 5 minutes of that's a fourth of the episode. And there was no mystery solving. That was just kind of a character development and showing their dynamic as friends. Nothing happened. It's so weird.
It's really interesting. It's really interesting.
I will say as well, this show in its inception was supposed to be inspired by The Files. And so we do have Nancy. She's, I think she's turning 21 in the second episode. It's her birthday episode. So she's 20 and she turns 21 for the rest of the season. So she's a little bit older. She's supposed to be a college student. That's the premise. We'll say this, but that's why she's moving to New York. And so she's supposed to be a little bit older, more mature, but it's not like the mysteries themselves are more mature, because The Files is like all murders and serious stuff. There's no murders or kidnappings. Anything like that. Well, maybe a little bit of kidnapping, but.
Well, time out. This is in New York?
Yes.
Okay. I missed that.
It's supposed to be New York. I think it was filmed in Toronto, probably, but. Because it's a Canadian show.
They just say the city. We're in the city. And so that was my question throughout. So I was like, what? Where are you? Like, what city? What are you, is this supposed to be Chicago? I thought it was supposed to be Chicago.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, I could have missed the New York thing, or maybe it comes up in a later episode or something.
Oh,
but
maybe.
Yeah, they just keep calling it the big city, the city. I'm here in the city. I'm moving to the city. We're in the city. I'm like, where? Yeah. What city? Tell me.
So it is kind of confusing in that way, because it's like, okay, I love The Files. I'd love to see like the Nancy from The Files. And it is the Nancy from The Files, because we have all that delicious Ned drama. Oh, it's so good. And you can tell it's inspired from that. But then the mysteries are not file mysteries. The mysteries are even like even more simple than the mystery stories mysteries, if that makes sense.
Yeah. They're like a Nancy Drew notebook level mystery.
But with the drama of The Files.
But with like grown up people in it.
So that's why it's so disorienting, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I would understand if it was aimed at like a children's demographic because of how short it is, like short attention spans, like easy mystery, like, you know, you have to logically get to it really quickly.
But it doesn't feel like a kid's show.
No. It's definitely not a kid's show. There's like, fetish box. Like, can we talk about
that? We will.
But like, so there's no way it's for kids. But then I'm like,
but it's not mature enough to be like an adult show. It's almost like they had a hard time figuring out who their audience was. And maybe that's why it wasn't as successful as they'd wanted.
Maybe.
Because of course it only got the one season.
Well, it does kind of seem to me like a show that was meant to be longer. And for whatever reason, they just didn't have the time slot for it. Like, they could only get a half hour time slot.
That sucks, because the Hardy Boys aired directly after this, because there was a Hardy Boys show at the exact same time, same network. So maybe just like pick one and give the whole hour to Nancy, you know,
or
to team them up.
Exactly.
Which they do. Which they do. I'll say in the last two episodes of the Hardy Boys show, Tracy Ryan does guest star as Nancy.
But it's just like, so it seemed like, okay, well, we only have, you have an hour. If you want to do both the Nancy Drew and Hardy Boys, you're going to have to fit them both into that hour. And so they're both going to be
half hour 20 long
minute TV shows, right? But it's just, But I mean, it's still really impressive to me that they can fit it into 20 minutes. It is like vague and confusing enough because of that 20 minute timeline that I'm like really interested in what's happening. I'm trying to like decipher the things that people, it's like I'm solving a mystery to like watch the TV show. And it's good. It's like the characters are really, they seem really complex and fleshed out, and they work well together on screen, so they're fun to watch. The costuming,
god, the fashion,
the outfits, Bess's white fishnets,
the best of it
Nancy's
all, it's
red
fantastic
trench. She's wearing like a sparkly coat or like a shiny coat, so 90s, so lovely. So that's great. So there's lots of things to love about this. It's just a little confusing when you're watching it. You're like, what's going on? But not really in a bad way, you know? So, yeah.
I also want to talk about, like, just the larger context of the show, like how it fits in with the rest of Nancy Drew and how it's been received by the fans, because I don't think I've ever heard anybody talk about this show.
It feels very forgotten to me.
The forgotten Nancy Drew show. That's exactly what it feels like.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think if there's, like, I was thinking about this the other day, a word for, like, when something, like, within a franchise is not canon, but then some new show or book or whatever uses something in a way that it, like, is so well received that it kind of becomes canon. And I was trying to think if there's, like, an example of this within Nancy Drew. And the only, like, real one that I can really think of just off the top of my head is Sherlock Holmes with Irene Adler. Because Irene Adler was never – I mean, when we meet Irene Adler in the books, I don't know if you've read –
I haven't really, no.
When we meet Irene Adler in the books, she's a very brief character. We meet her for like a few hours. Sherlock meets her and like basically he's called to her house to like help with this mystery. He's there investigating it. And by the time he like looks up, she's already gone. She's pulled a fast one on him. And it was never anything romantic. In fact, Irene Adler was married in the books and he never sees her again. And it's just kind of this like respect of like, oh, she outsmarted me. Okay, I can respect that, you know? But every single modern day Sherlock Holmes adaptation that I've seen, which
she's a big deal.
I've seen all of them. She's the romantic interest. She's always the romantic interest. And so it feels like even though it's not canon that she's a romantic interest, it has become that way because it was so well received by fans. It's fanon.
I believe that's the fanon.
It's fanon.
Yes.
Thank you. That's the term that I was looking for. So now I need a term that is the opposite of that because that's what this show is. That it just feels like nothing in it was really like, you know, nothing like really just jumps out and grabs you of like, oh, this is so good for this reason. Like, yeah, it's fun when you watch it and it's good, but you don't really like leave with like a, oh my gosh, I, you know, like the same way that I feel about like, oh, these games, they're so impactful. Like they made such like a big mark on me just because I love them so much because they're so rich in their story. Same thing with some of the other TV shows as well, that like just something about it is really stand out. And I don't know that that's – I don't know that there's anything like this from this show, that it's just like – it's just kind of there. It's just kind of a nothing burger. I don't want to say that, but it kind of feels like it sometimes. I don't know. That was a really long-winded way of saying that, but it's just like
– no, that's such a good point. Yes.
Nobody references it or anything.
I honestly can't even tell you how I found out about this TV show, how I knew about it. I just kind of did, but that's how I have a lot of my Nancy Drew knowledge. It's like, I don't know where this came from in my brain. It's just in my brain from somewhere because I've, you know, been a part of the Nancy Drew fandom probably my whole life. So I don't really know how I knew about it. I just know that I did.
Yeah.
It's very mysterious.
Maybe Francie is the example that I'm looking at here because canon, Nancy and Ned are always a thing. But then the 70s show comes along and they give us Frank and Nancy and people loved it. And so from then on, it was like, okay, people really like Frank and Nancy. Let's tease that a little bit more when we publish new books. And then the games use that as well. And then, of course, the CW show kind of goes in that direction too. So it's like something that's so great about that particular adaptation that it becomes canon, whatever, you know. So
Francie is a very good example of fanon happening. Yes, but you're right, there's something about this TV show that is just like a black hole. It's just there's nothing there. But not in a bad way. It's really weird. It's really weird. And it's definitely worth a watch if you're at all curious about this. It's a very interesting interpretation. I think – so there is one thing about this that – I don't know. I think all aspects of this TV show are very mysterious to me, and I do think that's because it's so short. There's not a lot that I actually have to make theories about or, you know, come up with my own ideas about. But one thing that still kind of sits with me funny is I just don't, when I watch it, I just don't know that I feel like I'm watching Nancy Drew.
That's
like
fair.
I'm not watching Nancy. And I don't know why, because when I think about her actions and the things that she says, I think it's all right. Like I like the way that Tracy Ryan portrays it. She's very coy. She keeps things close to her chest, but she's very smart and like quick and, you know, all the things that I would attribute to Nancy. And so honestly, I think it might be the hair color.
Oh gosh, yeah. Yeah, if you guys don't know, she's brunette in this show. Yeah.
Which is so off-putting to me because we've never had a brunette Nancy outside of this. So it's like, who is this?
In fact, Bess is kind of strawberry blonde in this one, mm-hmm. too. So yeah, mm-hmm. it's kind of it's strange in that way.
So I'm just like, is that Nancy? So all the character traits feels accurate, but I just, when I'm watching it, it just doesn't quite click for me.
I will give the show that. I think that the Bess George dynamic is fantastic. I think the Nancy Ned mm-hmm. relationship, how that's portrayed, is exactly how it is in the files. Mm-hmm. So I think that they got that really, really right. And in fact, mm-hmm. I think that this George might be my favorite George.
Yeah.
love the Bess and George in this, because sometimes when I watch Bess and George or even read about Bess and George's dynamic, I'm like, I don't really get how these two are friends, because there's just kind of like, not competition, but between the two of them. But this is like, they seem like they're having fun, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I love too that this show, I mean, sorry to some other, you know, renditions of George, but like, I feel like sometimes she's kind of personalityless. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like Bess gets all of the personality
right.
and George is just left with just kind of like snotty comments, which doesn't feel fair.
No.
But like, in this series, they give George, like, she like has like a job, like she has her own character and personality traits. Like she's trying to get into film and like, you know, she's, you know, a bike messenger.
Yeah.
And so she's like, she's so much more impulsive and like, maybe impulsive is not the right word, but she's like ready to go in a way that like Bess is more trepidatious and more cautious and a little bit more like assessing things.
Right.
But George just like jumps in with both feet. And so I love that. I love that for George. Also, her fashion sense is very distinct in this too. She wears like an Amelia Earhart like get up a lot of the time. Yeah.
And very I'm like,
90s. Was this a 90s thing?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't remember that. But like she wears that to bike around. She looks like an airplane pilot. She wears like literally like I think like a helmet with the goggles.
Mm-hmm.
And like I'm like, what is
So much leather yes. in this show.
Yes. And the pant, like the tan khaki coloredish mm-hmm. pants with the boots. Like,
yes.
Oh my God. But so I love that. I love that for George.
Yes.
I love George finally getting like an identity. But Ned, okay, I don't know what it is with these recent things that we've been covering, but they are making me simp on Ned pretty
yeah.
hard.
Yeah.
Now, Ned, listen, I will say, I don't like him, like, necessarily. In I think they get him very close to how he is in the files. I totally
yes.
agree. But the actor that they got to play Ned in this adaptation, oh,
uh-huh,
my God.
Uh-huh.
Like, talk about, like, 90s heartthrob
uh-huh.
material. Like, the charm, like, the soft-spokenness. I'm like, dude, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I get mm-hmm. what is attractive about this Ned.
Yep.
I get it. So, like, even though he is kind of a tool, it makes sense.
Yep.
And I still like him in spite of it. So,
yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. So I'm a fan.
The great thing about the show is Ned is only in like four of the episodes of the,
okay,
I think there's 13
perfect.
Total. No, I'm totally yep. kidding. He's great in this though. And he's introduced in the second episode of the season. So mm-hmm. we will definitely talk about him today.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. But yeah. So overall, very interesting. Very interesting.
Yes.
I will say too, so the lady who plays George, her name is Joy Tanner,
mm-hmm.
and I was watching it and I was like, this lady, where have I seen her? She's in so much.
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
She is so well worked and like not necessarily major roles or everything, but you have seen this woman before
mm-hmm.
if you've seen anything.
I know
so.
I have, yeah.
So Joy Tanner is who plays George, and she is very well recognizable to me. The rest of them, aside from Tracy Ryan, of course, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, unfortunately, the cast didn't really, like, nobody, like, really made it huge after
mm-hmm.
this or anything. Like, obviously, they still have acting careers, but nobody
mm-hmm.
came out of it that's like, oh, this is where they started or something, you
yeah.
know, something like that.
Yeah.
The only thing that I can really think of is there's a guest star. The man who plays Christopher on Gilmore Girls, Rory's biological father, he guest stars in one of the episodes. So you'll recognize him if you're a Gilmore Girls fan. But other than that, there's nobody that's like, oh, they were this really big star later or something like that that like you'd recognize. So I think Joy Tanner, and then I can't remember the guy's name who plays Christopher in Gilmore Girls. But them, I think that they're probably the biggest actors other than Tracy Ryan to come out of this.
Interesting. Anyway.
Three words.
Okay, this is hard. Well, first of all, because we have to, I think we should try to encapsulate both episodes in the two words.
Okay.
You know? Because there's just so little else to work with. And so I think one that I really like is like just like the idea of like luck.
Okay. Serendipity.
Serendipity, kismet, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like just kind of like, not just in how things happen in the episodes, but in kind of what the characters in the episodes are believing and kind of like the belief systems and the structures. There's that whole like 90s like mysticism situation going on, which in general I'm not a fan of. Of course, it lends itself really easily to racism, which it does.
It will,
which is unfortunate. But I think in general, the concept of like luck. I think that's what would be descriptive for me. There's also so much following and being followed in this.
Yes, in both of the episodes. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Just people are getting followed. Luck, following. And then I don't know.
I don't want to say big city, but maybe like apartment complex.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah.
Apartments. Yes.
Or even just like parks. I don't know.
Like building, like buildings. Like big city set. Like
big city skyline.
Yes. Like just buildings, I think. Because, yeah. That's because it almost feels like the places where they are characters in and of themselves.
Yes.
Which is such a feat for such a short TV show. But like Nancy's apartment, like the Callisto, like that's a character in this.
It is, yeah.
This show.
And it is the whole season as well. Yeah.
So yeah. So very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Okay. Great. Well, let's start off with episode one then, unless there's anything else you wanted to say.
No, I don't think so.
One more tiny complaint. There's no Carson in this show.
We
refer to him a couple of times and we like meet somebody who's like, oh, hey, I'm your dad's friend and he sent me to help you or whatever. But other than that, there's no Carson. I don't know if maybe they were like planning to cast him for season two or something and it just never happened. But anyway.
Okay. So our very first episode starts. This is Welcome to the Callisto. And Nancy is moving to the big city. She has actually transferred from her previous school to a new school in the city, which is very interesting. We didn't talk about this yet, but this is confusing to me. Like, we don't really get a reason as to why she's doing this.
She's moving to be with Bess and George because they go to this school. But it's not said.
But that's not what she says, though. She says, I'm moving to the big city. I'm starting at a new school. And I'm going to be staying with Bess and George while I'm there until I can find my own place. So, we don't really get a reason why she's come here, which is interesting. I think that's such a 90s plot.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really need a reason to move to the big city. It's just, oh, our character's moving to the big city. Like, it's time. You know what I mean? Like, so that's, I found that really funny. But anyway, so she's moving. She's transferred to this new school, and she's going to stay with Bess and George while she finds her own place. We get this opening shot of Nancy, of course, driving through the city in her blue convertible. Love it.
I had to watch it twice until I noticed the yellow stripe at the bottom of the car.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
So it's classic Nancy blue and yellow. It's so cute. I was like, I had to rewind. I was like, is that just a reflection on the blue or is that a yellow stripe? It's a yellow stripe. Yeah.
Oh my God. I love that. Props to whatever person came up with that.
Yes.
So she's driving and she pulls off the road to kind of look at a map and figure out where she is. Because remember, it's the 90s. In case you forgot. And she gets distracted by this guy who's like playing a violin in the park next to her. I guess she smiles at him. She thinks he's cute. And then she starts to pull back out into the road when a man in a suit with this like spiral tie pin runs across the street and Nancy ends up hitting him with her car. But he like gets up and runs off before she can stop him. She wasn't going that fast. And so she gets out, she tries to follow him, she runs off, she can't catch him, and then she comes back to her car and she sees that he's dropped something. It's this brown paper bag, and she opens it up, and inside is a packet of red clover leaves from some place named Mama Mugwort's. So here's that 90s mysticism that I was talking about. The man who's playing the violin helpfully tells her that Mama Mugwort's is like this store, it's a couple blocks away. Also, we learn his name is Matt. But then Nancy decides to go to Mama Mugwort's. Meanwhile, we see George on her bike and, yes, her Amelia Earhart get up. She is sees a guy getting, like, rid of a sofa on the side of the road in, like, this alley or something and ends up buying it off of him because she wants something for Nancy to sleep on while she's in their apartment. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I'm sorry. If you don't have a couch and I'm staying with you, please don't go buy one off the side of the road for me to sleep on. I will sleep on the floor. Thank you.
She even says that to us. She's like, we're not letting Nancy sleep on the floor. We need her to sleep on the bed bug infested couch that I found on the side of the road. Like, okay.
But anyway, she really wants the sofa. And so she calls Bess to help her get it up to their apartment. Because remember, she's just on her bike. So she's got no way of getting this there. This is what I mean about George being a little impulsive. She just moves when she sees an opportunity. Then we flash back to Nancy. She's at Mama Mugwort's, which, yeah, turns out to be this, like, apothecary slash, like, alternative medicine type of store. And Nancy asks the clerk about the man who just bought the red clover from him. And the clerk doesn't really want to help Nancy. He's like, no, like, a lot of people come in here. I don't remember anybody. And he quickly disappears into the back of the store before Nancy can ask any more questions. So Nancy starts looking around, and when another man comes into the store, and he approaches the clerk who comes back out from the back and asks if he's seen a man who was in here earlier today and shows him a picture of this man. Nancy sees this and realizes that the picture that he's showing the man is of the guy who ran in front of her car. So this guy came in looking for that guy too. But the clerk, again, doesn't give this guy any information, and so the guy just leaves. And Nancy tries to follow him, but he, like, realizes that she's following him. And so he, like, hides behind, like, a wall and then starts to follow her. So he, like, reverse tails her. It's a very funny scene. You want to take it?
Okay, so then we flash back to Bess and George, and they are struggling to get this sofa into their apartment. Or in fact, Bess is just kind of like standing there watching as George struggles with getting the sofa through the door. But then at this point, Nancy calls, so Bess picks up the phone, and she tells them that she is at a payphone in Jefferson Park. And Nancy sees a guy with this, like, carriage full of just, like, stuff. And she remembers that the man who was fleeing after the accident ran into this same guy in the park because he was there at the time. So maybe he has seen something. So this guy sees Nancy, and unfortunately, upon seeing her, he also just runs off. So yeah, he's portrayed as being unhoused, and he looks very fearful. He's portrayed as being, like, maybe a little bit paranoid. So Matt, the violinist, is just hanging around here as well right now. So she kind of calls over to him and tells him to go follow him. So he does run after this guy, and then she also runs after him. But we also see that the man from the store is still following her. So Matt eventually finds this guy with a cart and introduces him to Nancy. His name is Fillmore. And Fillmore tells us that he has no idea where the man from the accident went. He saw it, but he has no idea. But we notice that Fillmore is also wearing a swirly style pin, like the one who Nancy hit with her car. That guy was also wearing a pin like this. So that's very, very curious. Mm-hmm. But then Nancy runs off because she realizes that she is missing registration for her college classes. So she, like, runs off back to her car. But as she's leaving, she notices the man from Mama Mugwort's again following her. And so she, like, tries to, like, go another way to, like, get away from him or something. And, like, it's a fun scene where she's, like, spinning around in the park. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden this hand grabs her on the shoulder. But then it's just Bess and George. They have figured out where she is, so they've come to pick her up. But then she goes to campus and she realizes she has missed registration. So she actually runs into this professor that she'd really wanted to get into his class. His name is Dr. Kurtha. And I think so.
Yeah, I wasn't 100% sure. I tried to listen multiple times. It sounded like that's what they were saying. I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I really couldn't tell either.
Yeah.
But apparently Nancy has been, like, in communication with this professor since last summer, or this whole summer right before she's arrived in New York. She really, really wants to get into his class because she's read like a lot of his papers and a lot of the things that he's published. So she's like, she thinks that he's like this really, not prestige. What is the word I'm looking for? He's like really well respected in his field. And so she really wants to study with him because his field is criminology. Yeah. She even is like, oh, that paper on this. And like, here's what I agree with about you. And she's like
and
telling
him
Quantico
and all this stuff. Yeah,
exactly. Yes. And he remembers her. He's like, you must be Nancy Drew. Cause I do have people contact me about my publications, but nobody as much as you, young lady. And he tells her basically, like, you snooze, you lose on class registration. It's already closed. My class is full now. There's really nothing that I can do. And she, like, keeps going with the, like, oh, and this thing that you published was so interesting and so good. And he's like, he's finally just like, you know what? I'm late, but here is my, oh, what?
Well, she says, like, some guy ran out in front of my car and I had to go and make sure that he was okay. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that like ends up convincing him is like, oh, well, she's actually a really good person.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Like- so yes, he takes out his notebook and is like, you know what? Write down your phone number, your email address, whatever, just in case somebody drops out of my class. I'll have my assistant give you a call if there's an opening and you can sign up for the class. And she's like, oh, great. Awesome. And so she takes his pen and starts writing down. But then she notices that the pen, like the little clip on the pen, has that same swirly design as the guy with the tie pin and Fillmore with his little pen on his jacket in the park. So Nancy's like, hold on. Before I write anything down, you have to tell me where you got this pen. And he's like, I have no idea. The pen was a gift. I don't know what the swirl means. What are you talking about? So he just like takes his notebook and he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes back out to the car. Oh, she did get into the class, by the way. Yes, he eventually agrees. So she goes back out to the car. She tells Bess and George the good news because they're sitting waiting in the convertible for her. And then she starts saying, she's like, you know, and it's kind of weird because the professor had this swirly symbol on his pen. It's the same thing as the guy's tie pen from the park. Isn't that strange? So she takes out a piece of paper and she draws the symbol for Bess and George. And Bess, obviously, our resident fashionista immediately recognizes it. She goes, oh, that's from the Amina collection. And George is like, the Amina what? And she's like, no, Amina is this supermodel from the 80s who is like, she was like the model of the 80s. Mm-hmm. And then she eventually started her own like jewelry line. And so that is like one of the signature pieces from her jewelry line is this like signature swirl style that she uses. So I guess it's like super popular or something. And so now that Nancy knows, she's going to go back to the park to ask Fillmore about it. Right. Do you want to take it from here?
Sure. I guess she's thinking maybe because this pin is like super expensive that it doesn't really make sense as to how Fillmore would have like gotten his hands on it. So she asks him about it and he just starts like showing, he says like, follow me or something. And so she just follows him and they end up following him down into like a sewer access tunnel or something. They're like underground in some like gross, dirty place. And he ends up leading them to the guy who ran in front of Nancy's car. He's like down here, like laying on like a dirty mattress down here. And apparently this guy gave Fillmore his pin. And he told Fillmore that the pin was a gift from his daughter for like good luck. So he like gave Fillmore this pin in exchange for Fillmore, like, giving him this safe place to hide out in, I think.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. So Nancy approaches this man, and he definitely does seem injured from, you know, her hitting him with her car. But he refuses to go to the hospital. So she says, okay, well, you cannot stay down here because it's so gross. So, like, fine, I won't take you to the hospital, but let me drive you somewhere, wherever you want to go, I'll take you. And so he says, yes, please take me to Mama Mugwort's. So she does, they get out, they drive to Mama Mugwort's, and Nancy asks the clerk again who this guy is. And this time he does tell her, because he's there, that his name is Gavin Baraka, and he is new to the U.S. And apparently he was, like, tortured in his homeland for speaking out against the government. It's not, they don't say where he's from, but from some other country. And all of his family was killed except for a daughter who lives here in the U.S. And so, yikes. Gavin is paranoid and he does really think that people are like still after him. And so he's been coming to Mama Mugwort's to like help with his fear because he's been so intensely afraid, mm-hmm. which is really sad. But now the clerk thinks that, hey, he might be right because that guy came in here earlier looking for him with that picture. So maybe somebody is actually after him. And this is where things get a little bit even more murky to me. I know that Nancy wants to track down Gavin's daughter, right? Because she's living in the U.S. But I don't know how she knows that his daughter is Amina.
Because the like, swirl.
Well, I know that, right? Like, I know he said that his daughter gave him the swirl, but, like, that doesn't mean that his daughter is the one who, like, his daughter could have bought it for him, you know? Like, but...
it's a lot of luck and serendipity. Nancy just happened to guess correctly, you know? Mm-hmm. That's, anyway, that's a lot of it. Yeah.
So she tracks down Amina, the famous model Amina who made this jewelry line, living at this fancy apartment building called the Callisto. And she goes in, she talks to the doorman, and he tells her, like, oh, nobody by that name lives here. But Nancy realizes, like, he's just being protective of the people who live in the building. And so Nancy has to basically, like, convince him that she is legitimate and she just has information about Amina's father and she needs to tell Amina, like, directly. So the doorman does call Amina downstairs, and also, like, after he goes off to call her and then he, like, comes back into the room, he notices Nancy, like, admiring the building because it's, like, a beautiful, fancy, like, apartment building or whatever, and he tells her that, like, it used to be a luxury hotel and was converted to apartments for, quote-unquote, special tenants, which I thought was really interesting.
Rich and famous.
Yes. There's something about this, though, that I feel like would lend very well to the supernatural, though.
Yes.
This hotel feels like it's, like, when he said special tenants, I was like ghosts? Like, you're telling me this place is haunted? That's the vibe I got.
There is an episode later where there's a possible, like, maybe a haunting. And then there's also an episode where they, like, go to an asylum. And I don't love the, like, stereotypical asylums are crazy places. But, like, the spooky vibes from that are so good with, like, the, like, gothic spook from the books. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yes.
Do you want to take it?
Yes. Okay. So Amina comes down the elevator and they go outside to talk and she tells Nancy that her father went through some unimaginable horrors back in their home country, but she was able to get him out after the rest of their family was killed. So Nancy tells her that someone was following her father earlier that day. And right as she's saying this and
I'm just annoyed about it.
Yeah. And right as she's telling this, the man from earlier that day, like, comes up behind Amina and Nancy's like, oh my God. But then Amina introduces him. This is Simon, who is like a family friend, I guess, or maybe like works for Amina somehow. He's always around Amina. But essentially, we learn that Simon saved her father's life and now he works here. And Amina had sent Simon to go find her father, essentially. And so that's why Simon was following Gavin around.
The thing is that this is all implied. This is not said. Amina says is like, Nancy, this is Simon. That's it. He saved my father's life. That's all we get.
Right.
We're like, okay. So.
So I guess, like, he helped Gavin get out of the country or something, come to the U.S. It's not really clear.
Right.
But at this point, Amina and Simon get Nancy to come in their limo, and they all go to Mama Mugwort's together. And then, of course, Amina and her father are reunited there, and then they decide to take him home. And then as they're like going out the door, Nancy said something about like, oh, you know, now that that's solved, I can finally focus on finding my own apartment building because I still don't have anywhere to stay other than Bess and George's bedbug couch that they found on the side of the road. Oh my gosh, I didn't say this earlier, but it was really funny when they were struggling with it and George just like can't get it through the door and Bess is on the phone with Nancy. As soon as she hangs up, they're like, all right, let's go. Wait, we can't just leave the couch in the hallway. And Bess one-handed grabs the couch, twists it so it's the perfect angle to fit through the door and just pulls it in the apartment by herself one-handed. It's so funny. I loved it. Anyway. she can't stay on the couch anymore. And so Amina, like, doesn't say anything directly to Nancy. She whispers to Simon and then walks out the door. And as soon as she's gone, Simon turns to Nancy and is like, Amina wants you to come with us and we'll take you wherever you want to go. And then we just get, it just like flashes back to the Callisto and we see Nancy moving in. We get this like narration from Nancy over the last shot. And she's like, oh, I guess Gavin and Amina would say that, you know, we're just looking for fate or whatever. But I think that there was like a reason that we met because we both needed to find our way home.
Yeah.
Okay. So now she lives there. She's going to move into this building.
It's so wild to me that Amina can't even, she's not speaking directly to Nancy. She whispers it to somebody else's like, tell her to get in the limo or something. And he's like, Amina wants you to come with us. Like, she was just here. Like, why couldn't she say that?
She is too important to do her own inviting. Also, Simon has to do it for her.
Does she own the Callisto? Is that what we're supposed to understand? That Amina owns the Callisto?
Because this is a nice apartment. And Nancy, in the next episode, we'll see inside of her unit. It's huge. It's huge. Yeah. And I know that that's like, it's the 90s. That's the stereotypical. On TV, the apartments are going to be way bigger than they actually are because whatever. But no, how does she afford this? She's a college kid with no job.
Yeah, we learn in a later episode that she's like temping in the city and not doing well, not doing good at it.
No.
So like, it's very funny to me. I'm like, how's she paying for this? Is she paying for it? But like, it seems like Amina is just like, yeah, just live here. It's fine. Like, does Amina pull a straight? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, because how does she get it? Because the rest of the tenants, it's like models and rock stars. Mm-hmm. You'd think that they'd be like selective about who they let move in, you know? I don't know how it works, but whatever.
And also, like, even if Amina does own this apartment building, Nancy spoke to her for approximately 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just like, yeah, move into the building. Thank you for finding my dad.
So grateful.
Wild. Wild. Yeah. It wasn't like, oh, thank you so much. Here's a Starbucks gift card. It was like, thank you so much. Please move into this luxury apartment rent-free. Right. Supposedly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that is episode one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to start off with episode two for us?
Sure. So episode two is Happy Birthday, Nancy. And at the very beginning of the episode, literally like the first shot of the episode, we meet Ned.
Ah!
He is so cute. He is so freaking cute. He is like a Leonardo DiCaprio, 1990s. Like, who is it that I'm thinking of? The other guy. Oh, God. He's in a boy band. Hanson. Very, very, those are the vibes that you get from Ned in this. The floppy, curly hair.
Mm-hmm.
Talks kind of like this all the time. Mm-hmm. Kind of vibes. but he has just arrived to the city after flying in from Nairobi. And he somehow was able to skip customs at the airport by flying under someone else's ticket who was supposed to have diplomatic immunity. And so right now he's in front of the embassy talking to like an embassy employee about this. And the employee is like, kind of like, this is not right. Like, you shouldn't have been able to skip customs. And she's going to send him back to the airport to like, I don't know, fly home or just go through customs or something.
Mm-hmm.
But he is like, because he is so charming and like soft-spoken and attractive, he's like able to like sweet talk her. And she just like is like, okay, I guess just this once.
This was, to me, watching this, I was so confused. I was like, how on earth were they able to do this? Like, in what universe would we be reviewing passports on this side of the sidewalk in New York City and not at the airport? And then I was like, oh,
pre-9/11.
I know the answer. It's because it's 1995. We're pre-9/11. You can just do these types of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was like somehow he was flying on a plane with a bunch of other people who had diplomatic immunity. And so maybe it was like a private jet situation. And so they just got on a bus and then came to the embassy. I don't know if it's the U.S. embassy or the Nairobi embassy.
We're not even inside. We're literally on the sidewalk, just like at this bus. Like, it's not like an official thing. Like, we're at a desk checking in. We're just, it's just a sidewalk. Wild. It's so funny.
Wild, wild west.
Oh, yeah.
But so he's able to leave just fine. And so he's like walking off down the street and he doesn't realize that there is a man in a dark jacket and aviator sunglasses following him. Dun, dun, dun. And then Nancy, Bess, and George are like at a cafe talking about Nancy's 21st birthday, which is the next day. But all Nancy is doing is thinking about how much she misses Ned. She tells us that he's been interning at like this food distribution place in the middle of the desert, presumably in Nairobi. So he's been like out of touch for like the past year. Like they haven't really spoken very much because he's so far away and it's hard to communicate with him where he is. And even on her last birthday, they like talked about how they need space.
I'm sorry. If things are not going well and you can't set that aside for one day for her birthday, you suck, dude. Ladies, run away. I don't care if things are not going well. You're going to break up with her on her birthday? You couldn't wait till tomorrow to do that?
Also, he like broke up with her. He like broke up with her and moved to Nairobi.
Yeah. On her birthday. Wait until tomorrow, dude. Like, even if this was a mutual thing, which they kind of imply later that it is, but it, come on. On her birthday, there is no good reason for that kind of, anyway.
Well, too, they don't even really break up. He, like, leaves her in, like, limbo. They're like, oh, we just said that we needed space. So they're not really broken up. This is the whole... This is the whole, like, friends, like, dilemma. Like, we were on a break! Like, no. The whole, like, what is their relationship right now is very murky. And there's even a point later where they're, like, talking and Ned is telling her how, like, someone referred to Nancy as his girlfriend. And he goes, it was his words, not mine.
Right.
So, like.
But they're definitely, like, a couple, though.
Yeah, oh,
and he even sleeps at her apartment overnight. And
in her one-bedroom apartment in her bed.
In her bed, yeah. So that's not being together, right? You know?
Well, and, okay, anyway, we'll get. So already there's, like, this contentious relationship going on they have right off the bat. Things are rocky. So then we see Ned, with his backpack on, walking down the street, and he's across from the Callisto, so he's obviously about to go try to see Nancy, when the man who was following him shoves him into an alley and attacks him, and he has a knife, and he starts, like, stabbing Ned in the back, but, like, in his backpack, which is on his back, and so they, like, brawl, and Ned is able to grab the knife, but when Ned grabs the knife, the doorman from the Callisto sees this going on. He sees Ned with the knife, and he assumes that Ned is the attacker, so he runs up and tackles Ned, which allows the bad guy to then grab the knife again and just run off. This is so intense! Like, wow. Talk about, this is Files energy here, is definitely. What's going on. Like, whoa, wow. We're brawling in the street with a knife. This is not just some fisticuffs here. This man had a knife.
Yeah.
A gun. No.
I also appreciate that Ned packed up all of his stuff to come for this, like, what, 48-hour trip to New York, and he brings everything in, like, a backpacking bag, and his yoga mat is, like, strapped to it. It's like, how much yoga are you doing in this 48-hour period that you needed to bring it all the way from Kenya?
I don't know. Okay. It's the 90s, man.
Sure. Maybe he's just really into yoga. Who knows? Maybe that's where he was going to sleep if Nancy didn't let him stay with her.
In that alley with his yoga mat.
Oh, do you want to take it? Sure. So Ned is all, like, bloody and bruised up, but he manages to get his stuff together because, like, the backpack has been cut now. It's kind of, like, strewn out into this alley. And then there's also this mysterious box. It's, like, in this, like, leather pouch almost. So he puts it back into the pouch and shoves it back into his backpack. And the doorman apologized to him, and Ned tells him, don't call the police, I just need some ice for my nose because I think it's broken. And so they go back into the Callisto lobby and get him some ice, and I think that they actually do call the police here. But at this moment, he's like, you know, I was looking for whatever Main Street, and he's like, that's this building. And he's like, well, then you must know where I can find Nancy Drew. And in walks Nancy, Bess, and George at this exact moment. And Nancy is super, super surprised to see him, especially because he looks like he's just gotten attacked by a lawnmower. Right. but she's very glad to see him. So she helps him like sit down and they get the ice on his nose. And then she says, all right, Bess, why don't you stay here with Ned while the police come? And then George and the doorman and I are going to go out and investigate the lobby. And then Ned says something about like, oh, she never changes to Bess. Like, this is a side comment to Bess about how this is just always the way it is, isn't it? Ugh. Just wants to feel sorry for himself. Anyway, I guess he did fly a long way just to see her. And then she immediately runs out the door.
That's true, but
to help him. Because she's concerned. She wouldn't be doing this if she wasn't worried about him. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So she goes back out to the alley and George says she's already checked everything. And she's like, but did you check the puddles?
This is so gross.
And George is like, what? No. And so Nancy's like, well, you got to check the puddles. So there's this puddle on the ground of like kind of oily. So, you know, when the light reflects off of it, it's not clear through like water. It's kind of murky. And so she just sticks her hand down in this puddle, but manages to find something. There's a lighter in there, and it's like a fancy like metal lighter. So it's engraved. She gets out the tiniest magnifying glass of all time. It's probably even smaller than the letters itself on this lighter, but she sees engraved on the side of it. It says J.O. Jr. So that must be the name of the person who this lighter belongs to, which must be the man who attacked Ned.
Even though you're in a New York City alleyway, who knows whose lighter that actually, it could be anybody. You're telling me that not a single person stepped out to smoke that day?
Like, right.
Anyway,
it must be his lighter. So anyway, we flash back into the apartment. They're getting Ned upstairs. So Nancy's kind of helping Ned get into the apartment. And then Bess and George are carrying his backpack up the stairs for him. And so they're kind of lagging behind because it's really difficult to carry this big thing. One, because it's very large, but two, because of all the slices in it from the knife, like things are just falling out left and right in the hallway. So Nancy and Ned go into her apartment and Bess and George are still in the hallway because they're like picking up some things that they had dropped and out falls this mystery box that was in that leather pouch. And Bess picks it up and she's like, what is this? This better not be a birthday gift for Nancy. This is kind of strange because it's so ugly. but she pulls it out of the pouch and it's like this box. It almost looks like a jewelry box size. Yeah. And it's kind of decorated on top with some like fancy shells and some other little decorations. And as she's like trying to put it back in its pouch, some pieces fall off the top. And so she decides that she's going to like take it home, fix it, and then secretly return it to Ned so that he doesn't notice. But then they leave and we flash to Nancy and Ned on the couch in the apartment. And she promises that she is going to find the guy who attacked him. And he's like, no, don't worry about it. I'm not concerned about it anymore. I just wanted to see you. And then he's like, oh, actually, in all the excitement, I forgot I got you a gift from Nairobi. Let me go get it. And so he goes to his bag. And it's gone. And he assumes that it's fallen out of his backpack. But of course, we know Bess and George have it. And Ned says that he is so tired that he can't look for it right now. He's going to look for it later. And then Nancy starts to wonder, you know, Ned wasn't stabbed. Just his backpack was stabbed. Maybe the man who attacked him wasn't attacking him just to attack him. Maybe he was looking for something in the backpack. So she's like kind of thinking out loud, and she looks over and Ned is just like unconscious on the bed. He's already fallen asleep. He's so tired. Then we flash to the next day. You want to take it?
Sure. Yeah. So the next day, Ned and Nancy are just like walking down the road hand in hand. So like they're very much together, and she notices that they're being followed. Ned looks back and sees this guy and recognizes him as the man who attacked him the previous day. So Nancy decides to confront this guy. This is kind of what I was talking about earlier. They like play a little trick on him. So she like goes up to him, takes his picture, and then like runs, making him chase after her. I don't know why. I guess to try to get the camera back because he doesn't want his picture taken. I don't know. And then while he's chasing her, Ned is supposed to like tackle him, right? But unfortunately... I don't know how Ned can't manage it, but somehow in this commotion, the guy just ends up knocking Ned over and he gets away. But in this little scuffle, he has dropped his cigarette. And so Nancy picks it up and Ned identifies this particular brand of cigarette as being a brand of cigarette from Zimbabwe. This is a very big coincidence. Ned just flew over from Nairobi and this guy is... smoking a cigarette from Zimbabwe, and he also followed him yesterday. I don't know. It's just a lot.
Is it more than a coincidence? Because it's not like Zimbabwe and Kenya are like neighbors.
Yeah.
They're not exactly close to one another.
Well, no, I think it's more of the fact that this is the guy who like attacked him and is still following him. And he has a cigarette from an African country. But surely he knows Ned or somehow from that situation from when Ned. So it has something to do with Ned's Africa business, you know? Like, why wouldn't you just say it's a Kenyan? Like, why, as a writer, like, why wouldn't you?
Why not just a Kenyan cigarette? Because it would make more sense if he's been living in Kenya for the last year. And, yeah, maybe you also have been to Zimbabwe this time and know what their cigarettes are like. Or maybe Zimbabwe cigarettes are so popular that they've made their way around to other countries. But it's just like, where did Zimbabwe come from?
I don't know. It's interesting.
They're very different. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway,
so Nancy wonders if maybe this guy thinks that Ned is someone else. And Ned at this point also explains to Nancy that he did fly home on someone else's ticket. So this is a plausible theory. He flied home under the ticket of someone named Jack Olmsted. This is also something you would not be able to get away with today.
No. I honestly don't know how he got away with it back then,
well,
but whatever.
I guess you didn't have to show ID. You just had to have a ticket.
I don't know.
Mm, wild.
He does specify he got permission to do that. So like must be okay.
The guy gave him his ticket.
Right.
So this guy's name was Jack Olmsted, and he was the financial chief, or is the financial chief, of the charity that Ned works for. It was just like for the region that he's in. But he couldn't take this trip the last minute for some reason. We don't know why. But so like Nancy is talking to Ned about all of this, and Ned ends up getting frustrated with her at this point because he doesn't want her to investigate this anymore. And because he's like, just drop it. It's just a coincidence. It doesn't matter. Things like this happen. And he wants her to instead just like focus on spending time with him because he's only in the city for a couple days. But Nancy kind of retorts back like, this is just what she does. Like, this is just Nancy being Nancy. And if he doesn't like it, then why are they together?
This is so Files. I love it. Yes. It's exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, she's got a point.
Yeah.
They both have a point. I mean, he's only in town for like 48 hours and the clock's ticking. Mm-hmm. He's got to leave soon. Mm-hmm. But this is her. And he should be well aware by now that this is who she is. So
yeah.
I don't know.
So they go back to Nancy's apartment and they're talking a little bit about the famine relief program that Ned is working for. And he's talking about how much he enjoys the work and he feels like he's making a difference and how like working at this charity has made him like realize the importance of his relationships and particularly his relationship with Nancy, like how much she means to him. It's kind of goofy. It's like made to, I think the idea here is that like working at this charity for like people who like really need help has made Ned realize how bad people have it and like how important valuable life is. Just like, I guess fair, but it's just like, yeah, that ethno-western centric charity. Oh, I've been so changed by this charity work that I'm doing in this foreign country. It's like, yikes.
I'm also a little confused about just what Ned is doing because they make it seem like he's like in the Peace Corps almost, but it's like a mission trip type of thing. Yeah. But it's just an internship and it is a job and there's a CEO of this organization. So there's more to it, but he's there for a long, long time, and it's just like,
yeah,
what exactly are you doing and what is this for? I don't know.
It's not very clear. I mean, like, I assume it's like a charity organization of
it's
some
gotta
kind,
be right.
I
don't know.
Yeah, anyway, so they're talking about this, but being away for so long from Nancy has made him do some serious thinking, and he says that there are things that he wants to say to her, which is like,
what are you gonna say, Ned?
Gonna break up? Are you gonna ask me to marry you? Like, are you like, what are you gonna say? Like, are you gonna profess your love to me? You say you want to get back together. You say you want to move back. You say you want me to move with you to Nairobi. Like, what do you want, Ned?
Yeah.
But then there's a knock on the door, so they are interrupted. And it's Bess, it's just Bess and George again, and they have balloons for Nancy because today is Nancy's birthday. So they are there to wish Nancy a happy birthday. And then because they're there, Nancy asks them if they saw a box fall out of Ned's backpack yesterday. And they're like, oh, as a matter of fact, yes, we did. We just saw it in the lobby. Here it is. Here you go. Very smooth, you guys. Yeah. Do you want to take it? Because this part is so cringe. Oh. I don't know that I can talk about it.
I don't know how to get through this. Okay. So, yes, Ned gives it and is like, here, Nancy, I brought this all the way from the depths of a Nairobi bazaar. That's the exact wording that he used. It's kind of weird. But here's your birthday present, right? And he explains, and again, I thought that it was going to be like a jewelry box. No. He calls this a fetish box. And the intention is that you put, quote unquote, power objects into it and then wait for the magic. That's the wording that he used.
Unspecified magic.
And then Nancy's like, well, what's a power object? And he's like, I don't know, like a lock of my hair or something.
Okay, so here's the thing. I Googled this because I was like, what is this? Like, what? Don't do it, Corey. Don't do it.
Okay. No, I don't.
Because I don't know. I Googled that and all I got was like really dirty websites. So mm-hmm. I don't know if this is a real thing. Maybe it is. It's just not really mainstream. And so when I Google it, I get the mainstream stuff, which is the dirty stuff. I don't know. But it's very clearly a sexual thing. Like it's, yeah. He's 100% like telling her, put a lock of my hair in this box and wait for the magic to happen. Like, so like suddenly she's going to be like overcome with like attraction mm-hmm. towards him.
Is that what the gift is? Like, I want you to use this box because it'll make you love me
I
more?
Think so. I think so.
Okay.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, well, Nancy also makes a comment about the box, how it looks like it has tribal markings
yes.
on it.
Yeah.
And then Bess and George leave. So they're like looking at this box. And Nancy is just like, won't stop, like, she's very curious to the box and she's just like turning it over in her hands. She won't stop looking at it. And Ned starts like getting annoyed at her doing this because he's like, why are you acting like the gift is like some sort of clue and not just a present? Like, what's your problem? And she's like, tell me again, how did you find this box? And he says that he was walking through this bazaar with Olmsted, the guy whose ticket he was supposed to fly on. And Olmsted told a shopkeeper that Ned was going to visit his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. So again, he's like, that's the wording that he used, not me. And the shopkeeper's like, oh, I have the perfect thing for you to give your girlfriend for her birthday. Here's this box. Take this to the U.S. Take the box to America. Do you understand me? This box? Need to cross the border. And Ned's like, perfect, right? And Nancy concludes that this proves that this was a setup and that they essentially used Ned to smuggle this box into the U.S. And she opens the box and it looks like it's empty. But then Nancy's like, hold on, there might be something like inside of it. So we flash, we're in the basement of the Callisto with like, I guess they've got a bunch of power tools down there because Nancy's drilling. She makes this thing look like Swiss cheese. Yes. She has drilled so many holes into it. And Ned is just standing by looking horrified that she's essentially destroyed this gift within, you know, 20 minutes of getting it. So he says something about how he thinks he and Nancy are just too different. And she's like, you know, I thought so too, but you being here has changed everything.
My God.
And then they kiss. And then in the process of this, she's so distracted by the kiss, she drops the box. And this causes, there's like a centerpiece on the top of the box. It's like this round circle thing. And when she drops it, it like cracks the center thing. And all these diamonds and emeralds spill out of this little like hole in the center of it. So, all right.
Yeah.
Clearly, they're using this to smuggle jewels, right? So Seymour, who is that's the name of the front desk guy, the doorman, right? The doorman from the Callisto. He comes down and he says that some photos have just arrived for her. And this is the photo that she took of the man on the street when she was running away from him. So she's gotten this developed. And Ned looks at the photo and recognizes the necklace that he's wearing in the photo as being a tribal marking from this area of Kenya.
I don't know. I don't know where it is.
And Olmsted calls this region of Kenya the Diamond Region. And so Nancy realizes, okay, hold on. Jay Olmsted, and the lighter is Jay Olmstead Jr. This is a father-son smuggling operation. Obviously. Right? And Ned's like, what? And they decide, okay, we need to call the police. And so we flash to, in fact, why don't you take this scene?
Okay. So after they do this, we flash to the next day, and Ned is just like leaving for the airport. It's his last day. He's got to go back to Nairobi. And so they're like having like this tearful, heartfelt goodbye on the street outside of the embassy, I guess, where he's going to get back on another bus and go back to the airport. And Nancy says, like, she wished that they had more time together. And he's like, I know. But they kiss. And then he's like, don't forget your present, right? And he gives her the box. She starts walking down the street with the box. And then J.O. Jr. starts following her because he sees that she has the box. He ends up cornering her in this alley and is like, give me the box. And she's like, no. And then Ned shows up out of nowhere and punches J.O. Jr. pretty hard in the face, causing him to fall to the ground. And then the police come in and arrest J.O. Jr. Clearly, this was like a ruse or like some kind of plan that Ned and Nancy cooked up in order to trap this guy into getting to a particular location so the cops could arrest him. I don't know. I guess they were luring him out with a box, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, she and Ned walk off arm in arm happily, and that's the end. That's the end of the show.
Yep.
Okay. So what did Ned want to talk to her about? I'm sorry. He said he had things to say, and he never said them. They got interrupted, and then they just end. Did he go back to Nairobi? Does he go back to Kenya?
Well, he's in a few more episodes, so I don't know if he just comes back just for those, or if he's, like, sometimes living there, sometimes not, or if he just decides not to go. I don't remember.
Wow.
I'm going to need to rewatch it and remember what happens to Ned in his job.
Wow.
I feel like it's probably, like, he realizes that everything that they talked about last year, nothing has changed. Because even though they had their space, she's still Nancy Drew. Mm-hmm. She's still going to prioritize the mystery over him. Mm-hmm. And he's still not okay with it. So,
yeah.
Impasse, I guess.
It's just wild to me how, like, their Nancy even is like, but you're here now and things are different because you're here. I'm like, are they? Or are you just too attracted to him that you can't think straight?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you're not really given any reason for why things are different. You're just saying it's different now and then you make out. So I think you're just really attracted to each other. Like, that's okay, you guys. You know, like, you can not be in a relationship. Like, it's okay. Like,
that's, you're allowed.
You're allowed. Like, anyway. Yeah. Wow. 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 I mean, though, I get it. Like, I get it. I would want to jump his bones, too. He's an attractive guy. Like. You know, like that. I don't know what that actor's name is, but like, holy crap. That man.
Can't blame her.
No.
Cannot blame Nancy
at all.
You
really can't. You really can't.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's the first two episodes.
Mm-hmm. Weird. Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Weird.
Even now I'm like, what happened?
Yeah.
She uncovers a diamond smuggling ring in the course of 10 minutes.
Because
the other 10 minutes is birthday party stuff and fetish box nonsense. And
what was that about? Why the fetish? It's such a weird thing to put in there. Because they do, mm-hmm. they talk about it for a long time. Long time in the percentage of the episode, right? It's probably like 20% of the episode or something.
Yeah.
15, maybe 10. But like, why would you put that in? Why not just say like, oh, it's, you know, I got it in a bazaar and it's a pretty box. I thought you would like it. Like,
why not just make it a jewelry box?
Yeah.
You know, just here's this box for you to store your stuff mm-hmm. in.
Or like, I thought you could fit your magnifying glass in here. So I don't know, something like that, you know, or like your notebooks or I don't know, you could put a picture of me in it. I don't know, whatever you want.
Right.
But like fetish, but they even make it and they make it into such a sexual thing because even mm-hmm. Bess and George, who are there when like he says that it's a fetish box, they like give each other like eyes like, okay, well, uh-huh. we need to go now.
Right.
While you talk about this box, you know? So they get it. And Nancy makes a joke about it, too. Like, everybody knows that it's a sexual thing. And he's like, yeah, you put power objects into it and then the magic happens. What the hell?
Oh, okay. Magic for you, maybe, Ned. But
don't work your sexy magic on me. actually, please do. But anyway,
maybe, yeah. No, in the show, it's not like the CW show where it's sexy and they're like doing stuff. Like they kiss. We see kisses. Mm-hmm. It's implied that he spent the night with her, but they're not like. They're not showing this on screen. It's not like they're saying that they're doing these kinds of things.
There's sexual tension, but there's no sex.
Right. Yeah. It's not like they're getting dirty and making out and throwing themselves on the bed. Nothing like that.
Yeah.
But then we have this like very direct, like, Nancy, I want you to want me. Mm-hmm. And here's this like box that you're going to put my hair into.
Oh, okay. My God. I totally thought, though, throughout this whole second episode that Ned was like in on this smuggling situation, though.
You thought
so? Well, I mean, like, kind of. Because he was being really serious about her not investigating. Like, he really didn't want her to. And I was like, why? Somebody just attacked you, dude. Like, do you not care? Like, he was saying, like, things like this just happen. I'm sorry, but, like, if I was just mugged.
That's never happened to me. I've never had my backpack stabbed by some rando.
But, like, if I did, I wouldn't, like, dismiss it. I would be like, yeah.
Right.
You know.
Let's go find the guy.
Yes.
Maybe not us, but somebody should.
Let's call the police. Like, yeah, Nancy. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe you don't want your girlfriend to investigate it, but you're not just, like, writing it off as, like, well, just things like this happen.
That would have been an interesting plot twist if he had been in on it somehow.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he could have been. We don't know.
And hid it from Nancy. Or maybe the bad guys just relied on him being stupid enough to go through with it.
It's probably that. But I do think it's a fun theory to think of. Yes, he was actually involved. And then he, like, turned on the guy because he wanted to sell the diamonds and emeralds for himself. And he was giving it to Nancy as a way to, like, wait until things died down. And then he would come.
And get the box.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Anyway.
Interesting.
Oh. Yeah. So weird. So interesting. I will say I love Nancy's outfit of her red trench coat and her sunglasses. Mm-hmm. That's classic and iconic. And I do think that they, I love the costume design in this. And I think that they do a really great job at putting Nancy in classic outfits. Like just like her fashion is just so distinct from both George and Bess. Like, Bess is very clearly trendy girl and likes wearing like, you know, quintessential 90s stuff. Nancy's like classic prep, like, bold bright colors, like classic shapes, like stripes, like chef's kiss. Love it so much. And then George is like very niche, like athleisure type stuff.
Amelia Earhart Corey. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't know, man. It's such a fever dream. Such a fever dream. Highly recommend you watch it. Just because I just find it so interesting. I find it so fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's a mystery to me.
Yes. Maybe buy it on DVD if you want to make sure you're seeing everything in the right order and in English.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah.
Flashlight score?
3.5, I think. It loses a lot because it's just... Like I said, it's disorienting. Like, I don't know if this is the best thing or if it's just complete crap. And it's neither. It's truly neither one of those things.
Yeah.
But there are good points and bad points and confusing points. But it's not bad. I don't want to give it a bad score.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're right. I think it's somewhere in that 3 range, but higher than 3. Because it's good to watch. It's fun to watch. It's just, I just don't know how to feel about it.
It's not middle of the road, but I can't explain why it's not middle of the road. Yes. It's more than that. Because it's so different and it's unique, but there's nothing, like I was saying earlier, there's nothing like amazing about it. There's nothing that puts it over the top to get it a 4 or 5. Nothing that you take away and it's like, oh, wow, what a good mystery. Mm-mm. That was so intriguing.
Yeah.
How satisfying to see Nancy solve that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think I give it 3.75.
Okay. Very respectable.
3.75. Because I'm so intrigued. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to watch more. You know what I mean? And, well, I have watched more. But, like...
Yeah. I'll probably go watch more today because I love the spookier episodes of this. Yeah.
So, like, yeah. I Yeah. But hopefully we will cover more episodes of it in the future. And then maybe.
I hope so.
Maybe by that time I'll figure it out a little bit more, you know?
There's only 13 episodes. We could just, get them all done. And we not in one episode. Goodness, no. But no. Like, it wouldn't take long to get through them all if we wanted to do more. So. Mm. And it's good to look at the whole season in one context, too. I like to kind of look at it as an overall thing, even though it's not like there's one overarching like storyline or anything that stretches the whole thing. Every episode is pretty standalone. I think Amina comes back for like one episode. So like, if you didn't catch her introduction, it might be a little confusing or something like that. But outside of that, it's confusing. Not like
that. Oh, that, is that the episode that you watched? Yes. Yeah. It was the rock star one, Billy Farrell, the death of Billy Farrell.
Yes.
That's one of the ones I watched. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very confused.
So yeah, there's little things like that where it's not like there's recurring characters or like a lengthy storyline or anything like that, but it is fun to see all the episodes in one because you get the better picture of who Nancy is as a
character. Yeah, exactly.
And more Ned stuff and more Bess and George stuff, which I love.
Well, interesting.
Well, the next one, I already know we're going to love it.
Mm-hmm. Because next up, we are going to be going back to our tried and true, one of our favorite things to watch over everything. And I'm sure that you guys know what I'm about to say. But it is the 1970s Hardy Boys Nancy Drew TV show. We are going to be watching episodes 4 and 5 of season 2, which is a two-parter episode set in Hollywood. So very, very exciting. So, join us then, regular Drews.
We'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to Regular Nancy Drew. Email us at regularnancydrew@gmail.com.
If you like this episode, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
You can also follow us on Instagram at @regularnancydrew and Twitter at @regularnd.
You can also support us on Patreon. Patrons at the $3 level vote on upcoming episode topics and get exclusive access to our Scoop Sesh series.
And all patrons receive early access to each episode as well as weekly bonus content.
And to all you regular Drews out there, thanks for listening.